It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. One of the newest trends of 2016 is the rise of the premium single as a consumer, described as women who are delaying marriage, children, and earning money. We're going to look at the impact that they're having on the economy and could have on the election. Joining us in studio to look at this trend is Alice Green. She's Vice President of Secondary Research at Campos Research Strategy. Alice Green, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
Premium singles. These are millennials?
These are millennial females. I brought you as a gift the cover story from New York Magazine. It's pretty, it sort of grabs you, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
It would appear to be a middle finger, but it's actually a wedding finger.
Right.
From a female, beautifully manicured, showing the lack of a wedding ring. And yeah, it's been a very interesting trend that we've looked at primarily as a consumer trend, but it's certainly, I think, a pretty compelling one politically. What we've seen is, you know, that women are marrying at later times and at lower rates. In 2009, the percent of women who were married fell below 50% for the first time. And today, only 20% of women are married by the time they're 29. And it's interesting that that delay in marriage is translating into a much higher income by the time women are in their mid-30s, if you compare those who are married at 20 compared to those who marry after 30. Is it a big difference?
I'm looking at a really interesting chart with graphs that from the Campos study here showing that women who are under 20, if they get married,
by the time they're in their 30s,
they're making $32,000
less.
Yeah, and then 30 and up, they're all right. You explain this.
Sure. Yeah. So by the time women, if you look at women in their 30s,
right.
So everyone, we're looking at their incomes in their mid 30s. If you've married at 20, as compared to after 30, there's a $20,000 to $30,000 difference in your income at the age of your mid-30s. So that delay in income allows you to sort of build your income and professional foundation in a new way that's translating to, obviously, a consumer group, but also a group of independent women that are interesting to in terms of the electoral process.
So these college-educated single women, they've shifted away from the traditional path in life to what? Obviously, the career aspect plays into this, but there's more to it than that.
Sure. There's a delay in marriage. There's a delay in childbirth. And there's, you know, a couple of related trends. For example, greater likelihood than ever to live alone. So this sort of solitary life. So they're not necessarily shacking up, so to speak, and just not getting married. They're actually living alone more. Millennial women are unapologetic and quite happy and proud to be living alone in greater numbers. So that's another related trend.
And so what are the concerns that people within this, looking at it from if I were advising a candidate, for example, what are the concerns I want to be aware of this particular electorate?
Sure. Yeah, I think, you know, there are women who are, I think women are asking for something of a new deal. A lot of the issues that are making their way to the forefront, including minimum wage, highly, you know, women are affected by that. 2/3 of minimum wage workers are women. College debt relief, certainly big among millennials in general, and women are now going to college at higher rates than men. Wage parity, paid family leave, and of course having a Supreme Court justice who will influence the future of abortion rights are all pretty prominent, and you can see that they are making the list of things that certainly the candidates are talking about.
And women who fall into this category have significant disposable income that earlier generations at this age were using to take care of families and children.
That's right. That's right. And contrary to myth, millennials will you know separate from their money. They'll give money.
Well, aren't they more altruistic than than generations that have preceded them?
They're certainly more values driven and idealistic. than previous generations. Of course, they're also, while we do talk about college-educated women and earning at higher rates, we also do need to take into consideration that a lot of, you know, young folks have significant college debt that impacts them as well. But as donors, they are absolutely drawn to organizations with causes that they believe in. So, yeah, we've recently been talking about them as actual donors to membership organizations, and they're a forceful group there as well.
412-246-2002 if you want to join the conversation with Alice Green. Again, she's Vice President of Secondary Research at Campos Research Strategy. 412-246-2002 and our email address ESSPGH@WESA.FM and on Twitter at ESSPGH. Certainly, if you fall in the category that we've been describing, that of the premium single, you are certainly in demand when it comes to not only people that are trying to sell you things, but also the political candidates. We'll get to some of the political strategy that this might shape, but we'd like to hear from you again. 412-246-2002. Are the women we classify as premium singles moving ahead of their male counterparts?
They are behaving differently. They are certainly part of the reason why we refer to them as premium as consumers is that they are shopping at sort of more premium brands.
They're buying high-end stuff.
Compared to their contemporary dudes, yes, they are.
Right. And maybe is that because Can we look at why that is? Is it because for a guy, a couch is a couch? It could be something you pick up off the sidewalk, whereas that's not everybody, but
it could be. If you want to do a broad stroke, sure. I think
thank you for rescuing me.
One of the things that we have said as we talk to marketers is that I think that you can't make the mistake that women are just going to wait until they get married to set up their homes and to market to them as homemakers, that women are not waiting to get married and have children to set up homes. They're setting them up as individuals. So there's a difference there. There's perhaps a movement toward that homemaking where they are outpacing men. How about that?
That's I think, a fine way of putting it.
Okay.
So how is this influencing the election dialogue and the behavior of the candidates? Surely they're aware of this, and people are if the candidates aren't, their advisors are, and they're telling them, look, you know, here's what the concerns are. How are they responding to those concerns?
Sure.
Are they responding to those concerns?
Well, I think if you look at Hillary recently making a guest appearance on Broad City and having Katy Perry perform at a rally and using Lena Dunham as the creator and star of Girls as a campaign surrogate, that speaks to her scrambling a little bit with this segment. Like many youthful voters, women are generally siding with Bernie Sanders on the Democratic side. And so you certainly see Hillary responding to that with some very millennial female targeted activities.
And now, how is it that with all this female power, Hillary is not quite killing it? She's picked up the pace lately, but she's struggled to particularly connect with this particular demographic of the premium single women,
right?
Consumers.
They can be a pretty righteous group. Yeah, it's been an object of fascination for sure. I think that here we see less of a gender issue as just a youthful issue. And the youthful support for Bernie Sanders crosses genders. So I think that's probably the number one reason. It's, you know, there's been some interesting theorizing around if she's too much of an old school kind of feminist. She, in some ways, was the anti-premium single. She delayed.
In what ways?
She delayed her own rise to be the dutiful wife. I don't necessarily have an opinion on that, but that's certainly been there's been some postulation about that.
Hmm. Let's go to Jolie in Beaver Falls. I hope I'm saying your name correctly.
Yep.
Hi, welcome.
Hi.
Go ahead with your comment or question.
I just had a quick question about the survey that was done or the study that was performed. And I was just wondering, because I am a millennial, I'm 30 years old. I am married and have children, and I definitely did delay my career to support my husband as he continued in his. But I know in talking to my friends and family who are of my age, who aren't married, a lot of times their reasoning for holding off marriage has been that they simply don't feel they can find a guy who is in the same life situation. Like, they haven't found a guy who they felt had a good education or had a good job or was set up for marriage. And so I'm wondering how much of that factors into that, to the outcomes of that study.
Okay, and stay on the line, Jolie, because I have a question for you. But go ahead and answer that,
sure,
if you would, Alice.
Sure, I'll do my best. Let me first say that there was this, what we've done with the work that we've done around the premium single is sort of to amass and synthesize and analyze existing information. So we've looked at many different surveys, many different polls, and many different resources to perform this analysis, which is sort of the nature of secondary research, which is where I'm at Campos, as opposed to primary, which would be starting a new survey or conducting focus groups. So what I'm talking about today isn't the result of a single survey, but an analysis of many. I guess I would say, Jolie, that there is a newfound comfort with delaying marriage, that it is now okay. It is now acceptable. So if there's been a change in the eligibility of men, I suppose that may absolutely be driving a difference. And, you know, but I would also say that if there hasn't been a change in the eligibility of men, there has been a change in women's comfort level with marrying later.
Okay. So Jolie, the question I would have for you is, which, if any of them, which of the remaining presidential candidates are speaking to you on the issues that are important to you? And if so, why?
To be completely honest, I haven't really listened completely carefully. I haven't studied yet all of them, but what I've heard, the snippets that I've heard, and in talking to people that have studied, you know, the positions, I would say Bernie Sanders is probably the closest to speaking about issues that are important to me.
Well, it sounds like, Alice, this information, this research, you've got your finger on the pulse of people like Jolie. Jolie, thank you for joining us. And let's go to Amy in Squirrel Hill. Hi, Amy. You're on with Alice Green. And we lost Amy. She did have a question, though. We did get her question, which is, how does Campos define a millennial? Probably the
sure.
same way everybody else does.
Yeah, I mean, there's just a little bit of variability out there in the world. But it is anyone born between 1982 and 2000. That's sort of a pretty acceptable definition of it. Certainly, I know millennials who find that pretty aggravating, that those who are 34 are pretty different from those who are 22. And so frequently we'll do some analysis that will sort of split them in two, those under 30, those over 30, and so forth. But it is about an $80 million person generation. So it's a big, big generation now outnumbering baby boomers.
How are Republicans doing with this generation?
Well, if we look at the ones who are left, right?
Right.
We've certainly seen
Ted Cruz, Donald Trump, and Ted Kasich.
Yeah, they've stepped in it a few times, as you say.
John Kasich, excuse me.
You know, if we look at the Rush Limbaugh calling Sandra Fluke a slut after testifying for birth control coverage a year or so ago, that was quite a firestorm.
Right, but he's not running for president.
That's correct.
But does what he say become attributed to?
Sure.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, I think that my recent reading, as I look at the sort of skinnying lineup, is that the Clinton campaign, if we're looking at a Clinton-Trump contest, is expecting a historic gender gap between Clinton and Trump.
So will they get out to vote?
Well, I've seen numbers that say as
the
many
the premium
as,
singles we're
yeah,
talking about.
Yeah, I've seen numbers that say as many as 40% aren't registered. So that's certainly a meaningful number. But there is also some there's work that's been done that shows that those who in this group can sway the outcome of the presidential election. And I was recently reading a piece from the Center for Information and Research on Civic Learning and Engagement, and it noted that Pennsylvania youth, those under 30 in particular, are in the Pennsylvania's in the top 10 states for states that could sway the election with youth getting out and voting.
Well, it's certainly interesting research, and we're glad that you've been here sharing your thoughts about it with us. Alice Green, Vice President, Secondary Research at Campos Research Strategy, talking about the rise of the premium single and how that could possibly impact the election. Alice, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you very much.
Coming up, Maysoon's cartoonist and pop culture contributor Joe Woese joins us with a look at the surprising expenditures being tallied by the presidential candidates. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.